Welcome to the Relatable Finance Podcast. Here are your hosts, Joseph Carl and Shane Phillips.
Welcome to today's episode of Relatable Finance. Today, we are going to be talking about the bear market we saw in the first quarter of 2020 and if we should have seen it coming.
I'm going to say absolutely not. I know that there have been some studies that said we were very vulnerable to a global pandemic, which has certainly been the primary driver for a lot of the concerns in the bear market that we have. I know that Shane's going to go over some various statistics today, but I will stand my ground and say that without the coronavirus, I do not think that we would have had a bear market right now.
So yeah, like Joe said, we're going to kind of do it in a point counterpoint fashion. I think I'm going to win most of these discussions, but let's get started. So first of all, Joe, our bull market that we had that ended earlier this year was the longest we've had in history. It went on over 10 years. And when something goes on that long, I mean, you have to think it's going to end. So shouldn't that have told us, blinking red lights, hey, this is going to come to an end pretty soon?
So yeah, I think in hindsight, it's easy to say, you know, this is the longest bull market in history. So obviously that it was a clear sign. But when you really look into the details and understand the dynamics, I think it was kind of justified. Even though that the length of time was really long, the actual returns that we had experienced were not as strong as prior bull markets. And also overall global economic activity or global economic growth was not as strong as it had been, or was relatively modest. So we did not have a recession. Economic growth was relatively mild. So it kind of justified a prolonged bull market in stocks.
Okay. And I can understand that to an extent, but what if I were to say that the average bull market is about 4 years? So I understand for some of those reasons, maybe we go five, maybe we go six, seven, but it went on 10 years. So that is much, much longer. And even considering what you said, I think there's still room there to say, all right, should we pause? This has gone on a little bit too long.
Yeah. So again, hindsight's 2020, but a lot of bull and bear markets tend to correspond to the economy. And a lot of bear markets, which is declines greater than 20%, have tended to correspond with the recession. So since 1949, we've had 11 bear markets that have corresponded with recessions and two that haven't corresponded with recessions. After all this is said, we'll have 12 of 14 bear markets corresponding with recessions. So a lot of bear markets had corresponded with recessions, and we had a very long, prolonged economic expansion, and that growth during that expansion was relatively mild. So without the recession, it's hard to say that we should have had a bear market. We got close in 2018. Nonetheless, if you look since World War II, our business cycles have become much more pronounced or elongated. They're far longer today than they were before the World Wars. And that was the longest expansion in history, so justifying the longest bull market. And also, if you take the second and fourth longest economic expansions, which were in the 80s and 90s respectively, those two were separated by the narrowest possible margin of a recession, which is two quarters. And if you assume for a moment that that didn't happen, that would have been 17 years of economic growth, and we would have been around 60 to 65% of the way through that. So yes, was it long, but it was justified by a very long economic expansion.
So if we pick and choose some of our data, you're basically saying that wasn't really the longest expansion in history.
I'm just saying that it was justified.
All right. Well, a few more facts for you. So prior to all this and the recent loss in jobs, we had the lowest unemployment rate really in the last 50 years or so. And yield curve. So the yield curve inverted numerous times last year. And usually that is a sign that maybe the end is near. So those are just a couple of facts, not bending any data. Just saying that a handful of things maybe should have said, all right, 10 years is a long time for this bull market to continue.
Yeah, so very similar to a lot of the other points that you've made already, these were warning signs. And obviously, if unemployment goes really low, that's usually a sign that we're close to the end. But actually, there was other signs that said that there was room for the labor market to tighten further. Even though unemployment was extraordinarily low, it took us a really long time to get there after the financial crisis. And wage growth, which is another sign of labor market strength, was relatively modest, which implied that there was further room to go in terms of the labor market tightening. So is it a good point that unemployment was low? Yes, but there was other factors that said that things could even tighten even more. In terms of the yield curve, that is, again, a very good historical sign. If the yield curve inverts, that means that we're likely headed towards a recession or a bear market.
I know it is. That's why I brought it up.
Great point, Shane. But at the same time, we had really low interest rates and really low inflation, which is keeping longer-term bond yields down. And then we had extraordinary intervention by central banks across the globe, which also suppressed longer-term bond yields. So yes, historically speaking, a yield curve inversion is a great indication that we were headed towards a recession or bear market. But in this case, we were kind of dealing with some unique factors that influenced that yield inversion.
Okay, understood. I get it. But I'm just warming up here. So what about valuations? So when we look at U.S. stocks coming into this year, valuations were above average. And this is looking on a 25-year average. So I'm not going all the way back to the 30s and 40s and 50s. I mean, I'm talking about relatively recent valuations. And when you look at valuations for stocks, it's a pretty good predictor about what type of results you're going to get. So should we have seen this bear market coming because valuations were a little bit high?
Yeah, you're 100% right. Valuations were high leading into this. And that has historically a sign that returns will be relatively modest going forward, or we need a big correction in order for returns to return to normal. Markets are forward looking. And prior to the coronavirus, the economy looked as though it was going to be picking up. And so part of the reason that valuations were relatively high is that prices were picking up in the anticipation of economic growth picking up. And then also, I know I've said it a couple of times, but interest rates and inflation were relatively low, which means that bond yields were also very low. And when bond yields are low, they're not competing with stocks to the same degree. So said another way, when bond yields from inflation and interest rates are low, and valuations have historically been higher, which is another reason to be where we were prior to the coronavirus.
And I understand that to an extent, because yes, yields have, or interest rates have been very, very low here for a while. But just a last couple of times valuations got to that point where in 2018, before we saw that big fall in the fourth quarter that almost hit a bear market, if my understanding is correct. And then you have to travel back all the way before the global financial crisis when valuations were that high. So I know it's just one piece of the puzzle, but if we look backwards, again, hindsight 2020, maybe that should have been something that we saw coming.
Yeah, I think everything that you've listed off here as a potential warning sign or a potential red flag that we could be headed towards a bear market or a recession. That being said, if you dive into the underlying dynamics, we were in a unique time frame where we had a very elongated economic expansion. It took us a long time for unemployment to get low. Wage growth was relatively modest. Inflation was low. Interest rates were low. That kind of influenced some things to maybe create some of those red flags or warning signs. I think without this coronavirus or the global pandemic that we're having right now that dramatically shut down economic activity, I think that we would still be having all those same discussions and all these red flags would still exist today. But obviously the presence of the coronavirus and the impact it's had on economic activity really made this, happen very quickly.
Yeah, and I completely understand that the coronavirus came out of nowhere and really affected a lot of things. These are just some things that, coronavirus aside, maybe we should have saw coming. And you've mentioned low interest rates numerous times. So let's move on to my next, which has to do with that. So we talked about valuations for stocks and them being a little bit high. When we look at bonds, kind of the way we view those is being expensive or cheap is credit spreads. So credit spreads are basically how much extra you're getting paid to take some credit risk. And spreads were very low, the tightest they've been since early 2018. And then all the way back again before the global financial crisis when spreads were that tight. Should that have been another warning sign in this list that I will keep on creating of potential worries coming into 2020?
I will say, in hindsight, yes. But at the time, credit spreads expand and contract depending upon the economy. If the economy looks relatively strong, credit spreads will narrow. If there are concerns about the economy, credit spreads will widen. Prior to the coronavirus, the economy looked like it was picking up. Credit spreads were relatively narrow, but they had been narrow for quite some time. It wasn't like they had just become very narrow. And then, again, we were in a unique time with low interest rates, very low interest rates, low inflation, which meant that bond yields across the board were relatively low. And so some people were willing to dip into credit and take on that risk despite yields or spreads being relatively tight. So I do not think that it was a red flag. It was justified at the time. And without the coronavirus, we would be still in the same exact environment with very tight credit spreads, because all else being equal, without the coronavirus, things would likely be picking up right now. Is it a warning sign? Yes, but that warning sign could have been there for years before it actually came to fruition.
So here's a warning sign that's been around a little bit longer and has been getting press for a while now, is credit quality. So when you look at bonds generally, there's investment grade and then there's below investment grade or junk or high yield bonds. Coming out of the global financial crisis, about 35% of debt was rated BBB, which is right above that line. And what we saw coming into this year, it was about 50% of all debt. So it seems like more and more debt is getting closer and closer to that junk. Does that mean we should have seen these, it sounds like, weaker companies having more and more debt on their balance sheet?
Yeah, I think it's a great point, and it certainly jumps out as a potential concern. But at the same time, if you think about it, we've been in an extraordinarily low interest rate for over a decade now. And if you're a CFO, or if you're really anyone that's, you know, managing the finances of a company, you're almost incentivized under this low interest rate environment to take on as, you know, as much debt as you possibly could. And companies with more debt relative to their revenue are going to have a lower credit quality. That's just how credit ratings work. So it's not surprising that the credit quality deteriorated. And you also have a lot of uncertainty in the economy right now, with specifically with certain sectors. There's a lot of disruption going on. So for example, Amazon is disrupting a lot of things. For example, take Macy's or Best Buy or Walmart. They're going to have a little bit lower credit quality because we're not necessarily sure what those revenue streams look like in the future, given how much Amazon and online shopping has really progressed throughout it. And that disruption is really impacting or creating concerns of the future.
But it would, or it is a concern if some of these bonds do get downgraded, because if a bond goes from investment grade to below investment grade, there are certain investors that aren't able to hold those anymore per their investment policy, things like pensions and endowments. Could that be something that could ripple through and affect the markets even more?
Without question. And I think that that's why you've seen the Federal Reserve step up so much into the degree that it has in response to coronavirus. The reason that the Federal Reserve and other central banks have been conducting this quantitative easing policies that they had is that because they didn't really have a whole lot of room to maneuver with their short-term rates. Interest rates were relatively low and had been low for quite some time. And lowering them further really wasn't providing the level of stimulus that it had in prior times in economic history. So one of the means that they were doing was buying longer term government bonds to keep yield suppressed. And that's one of the reasons that all of these bonds were able to be even issued at these lower credit qualities and have that. And with this event, the downgrade could push that into lower credit qualities, which could create ripple effects throughout the financial system and really cause dominoes to fall. And that's, you know, hindsight's 2020. Maybe we shouldn't have did that or tried to find other ways. But I think without the coronavirus, it would have worked, and everything would have been fine. But that's why you've seen the Fed step in to the degree that it has.
All right. I'm sick of you saying, you know, low interest rates and low inflation being the solution for everything. So let's move a little bit further where you can't use those as excuses. Politics. So 2020 is an election year. We knew that coming into this year. And election years bring uncertainty. Uncertainty is not necessarily something the market likes. Should we have been worried moving into 2020, it being an election year?
Elections certainly do present uncertainty. And I think today it presents even more uncertainty than it has in the past, given our political polarity that we have in our country right now. That being said, historically, during election years, stock markets have produced pretty strong returns. The economies have historically done relatively well during election years. It does not mean we would have done well in 2021 beyond that. But historically, election years have been relatively strong, even stronger when a current president has a chance to be reelected. So I don't think that would have been, again, without the presence of the coronavirus, I think things would have been fine there. You know, regardless, you know, of your political beliefs, Shane and I are apolitical on these episodes, but the better the economy, the better the likelihood that an incumbent president is to be reelected. And whether you're a fan or not of Donald Trump, if he were to be reelected, which it looks like it was a pretty decent chance to start the year, but if he were to be reelected, there's a good chance that at least business owners and CEOs would have had an idea of what that climate would have looked like, because they've already gone through 4 years with Donald Trump. And so that could have presented some confidence for them to go out and make some decisions. Whereas pre the election, it was a little bit uncertain.
Okay, and that leads into my final point. So I understand getting some certainty in the White House would have been good. But something I think we forgot about because of the whole coronavirus thing is, remember we had that little trade war with China? That wasn't supplying us very much certainty. We were seeing world trade volumes fall flat or even negative. We saw tariffs being tossed back and forth. I mean, that is a very real thing that did calm down a little bit, possibly, like you said, because it was an election year and they're pulling that back a little bit. But that is still something that was causing a lot of problems throughout the global economy and affecting markets along with it.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say that if Donald Trump were to be reelected that it was going to provide consistency. I would say it's more familiarity, that it was going to present an environment or a political climate that was going to be consistent with the prior 4 years. If that's the case, and coronavirus is not an issue, then we're probably going to have some trade tensions. And they're probably going to continue for the second part of that. But there is some arguments to be made that trade or tariffs, these trade wars are a good thing. One of the challenges that we've had is that we are such a global economy now. Probably before those tariffs, we were the most globally integrated economy that we've ever been in. Trade is a fantastic thing. Everyone benefits from trade via lower goods and services that we trade throughout the world. But at the same time, it's made it very difficult for the United States to keep the labor market. It has a strong correlation with a lot of the things that we've talked about. It's going to make it harder for us to have very strong, consistent employment. A lot of those lower cost labor jobs have been shipped overseas.
But we had prior to this some of the lowest unemployment we've seen in our history.
Very true, but it took us a very long time for us to get there, and wage growth was relatively mild. And to kind of add to that, the goods and service, some of the goods that we buy and purchase are purchased from overseas and are relatively cheap. So that's great. We get to buy things for very low cost, but at the same time, it keeps inflation low and presents other problems. I mean, think about it. With the coronavirus, one of the challenges that we faced is a lot of things that we need are produced overseas and we can't get it relatively quickly because they need it. So I'm not saying that I'm a big fan of tariffs, but there are arguments to be made that it would have a positive impact because it would allow your economy to be more domestically oriented as opposed to globally oriented.
We can just wrap up today's episode. So obviously, like I said, we're trying to play a little bit of devil's advocate here. The biggest thing is, I mean, Joe had some great responses to my questions, but this coronavirus is the thing that brought more of these into questions. There's always going to be certain topics that we are worried about or are looking at extra close, and these were all some of them leading into this year. But this was truly an unexpected virus that really shut down the global economy, putting a little more focus on some of these areas. But we hope you enjoyed today's episode of Relatable Finance, and we will talk to you soon.
Provenance Wealth Advisors is not a registered broker-dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services, Inc. Securities are offered through Raymond James Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered through Provenance Wealth Advisors and Raymond James Financial Services Advisors, Inc. Any opinions are those of Relatable Finance Podcast and PWA, and not necessarily those of Raymond James. The information contained in this report does not purport to be a complete description of the securities, markets, or developments referred to in this material. There is no assurance that any of the trends mentioned will continue or forecasts will occur. The information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but Raymond James does not guarantee that the foregoing material is accurate or complete. Any information is not a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making an investment decision. Does not constitute a recommendation. Investment involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected. Diversification and asset allocation do not ensure a profit or protect against a loss. Investing involves risk, and investors may incur a profit or loss. Raymond James does not provide tax or legal services. Please discuss these matters with the appropriate professional. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Future investment performance cannot be guaranteed, and investment yields will fluctuate with market conditions. Any examples given in the podcast are for illustration purposes only. Actual investor results will vary.